Welcome to Cambridge Stronger, where culture counts and values matter most. I'm your host, Amy Weber, and joining me today is Lisa Warner, Life Underwriting Training Council Fellow and Retirement Income Certified Professional at Marketplace Financial Group. That is a mouthful.
I can't wait
to talk about it. When someone has titles like that behind their name, it means they've got really good stuff to talk about. So I'm so glad to have you. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
So with that, let's start where I always do, which is at the beginning, not necessarily the beginning of your life, but the beginning of your financial services life. How did you find this as a career?
I was introduced to it when I was working at a bank in college, actually. They had a financial advisor on staff, and I kept seeing how he worked and how he just looked like he was seeing his friends all day long. And I was like, what does he do? And what is that all about? And it was really intriguing. I was majoring in finance. I actually also majored in psychology. So I kind of had that background anyway. But coming out of school, I went a different path, mostly because I had student loans to pay for, but the financial planning industry just kept calling my name. So when I was introduced to it by another advisor, here in Neenah where I live, I jumped at the chance.
So I believe banking is a great starting place for people in our business, honestly, for a lot of reasons. We have a really high level of success with individuals who have some sort of banking background. It's so different, but there's just some connectivity that gives not everyone, but a lot of people like a jump, a head start into what we do and why we do it. So good place to start. But talk about that moment when you made the decision to make that leap. Was there a particular, like you said, it was always there, but was there like a day, an event?
Sure.
How did you really make that leap?
Yeah, it was honestly just someone kind of asking. It was literally always there. I left college. I moved on to a corporate gig. Hated it. I was just always like, when could I possibly go back to that? And it really took another advisor talking to me about it and kind of explaining, you know, how it actually works and what it looks like from an income level for me to decide to take the leap. The nice thing too, I was working a job while I was getting all of my licensing, you know, my prerequisites, so I could get started on the ground running. So, but it was really that financial advisor kind of reaching out and kind of seeing that promise in me, I guess, that got me in the door.
Maybe an odd question, but for some of our listeners who are trying to think about, you know, whether or not they have what it takes, it sounded like you were studying finance and psychology, which in my opinion are two really good backgrounds to have when you're coming into this world. But if you could only do one, which one do you think really teed it up best for you?
That's hard. I would say finance only because it gave me the background that I think you need. I came into this with a lot of confidence in that realm. You know, I didn't necessarily focus on financial planning, but it wasn't daunting to me coming into it. But I will say, as I'm in this actual career, the psychology comes into play a lot. It's reading other people's body language. It's like picking up on different phrases that people use. It's being confident enough to kind of push on certain subjects or kind of needle to get some issues out into the open, you know, because half the time we're like counselors to people. We're not just financial professionals. So,
Lisa, did you come in right at the beginning as an actual client-facing advisor, or did you carry some other roles to try to help you build into it? Like, how did the entry?
I came in client-facing, and I worked my butt off. I did for, I feel like I still do all the time. It's just different, right? But I did. I went in client-facing right away. I had some other advisors in the office I was in. They had a good training set up. The manager was great and kind of helped me kind of get on my feet. But I also am pretty independent. And once I kind of got the feel for what I should be doing, how I should be running client meetings and everything else, I just kind of take it and ran with it. You learn as you go. You just don't want to make big mistakes that like cost your clients money or issues. So, but I was, you know, blessed with people who would check in on me, who I knew I could go and like knock on the door and ask a question about something I didn't know or didn't feel comfortable about. And they helped me out. So, I can say I haven't had any major, you know, mistakes along the way, which is great.
Sounds like what I would call quick start, though I'm yes. a fan of Colby, but that's what you sound like. So that yeah. makes a lot of sense. What about making the leap from the insurance environment to the independent environment? How did that go for you?
Yeah, so I was looking, I did it over 10 years ago now. I wish I would have been able to do it sooner, but I had my daughter and then I had my son, you know, at the time, and it just didn't seem right. I knew I wanted to go independent. I knew I wanted to kind of just run my own business and not have someone telling me what to do with my clients. And actually, my partner, Carl Wunderlich, who also works here at Marketplace Financial Group, I kind of talked to him. We ran into each other. We talked about the business and he was like, do you want to come on board? And I said, absolutely. And it's been 10 years now. Like I said, wish I would have done it sooner. Wish I would have known about Cambridge sooner. Because it was night and day different. And I was like, this is exactly what I needed. This is exactly how I want to run my business. It definitely took time, you know, when you come from an environment and they're telling you how to do things to an environment where you can kind of dictate it. It takes a little time, effort, practice to figure out what that flow is going to look like, right? Like, how do I want to work with my clients? How do I want to set this up with them? What do I want to do for follow-up? But I think that's something if you're in this industry, you kind of have to always be doing. You have to always be looking at your processes and seeing if there's ways to improve it and talking with your clients and asking them what they need because their needs change as well.
Yeah, great way to tee up my next question, which is let's flip to the client side. So, you know, what does the process look like? How do you find the right clients? And how do you help those clients uncover their big picture strategy on what they want to work towards? What are the tools that you're using?
Yeah, I mean, 100% of my new clients are referrals now. I haven't had to prospect for a client in a long time, which is great. Typically, if they're referred by a client, they're pretty similar to the client. So I kind of know what to expect when they're coming in. But I do sit down and we have an introductory meeting and I just basically say, hey, we're just going to talk about you and what your priorities are and, what your experience has been. And we're going to hash out if I can even be of help to you. And that's what we do. We spend the full 60 minutes talking about them, their priorities. I'll just kind of dig into certain things. If they seem like they want to avoid a topic, I might actually double down on that topic because obviously that's a pain point. I ask about their experience, you know, have they worked with other advisors, have their parents, because that can play into what their expectations are for me, or their preconceived notions. And I want to make sure I'm addressing, that and they know exactly kind of how I run things. But a lot of it is I need to know them. They need to trust me. As far as uncovering those big picture goals, I'd say a lot of people come in with some idea, but half the one, you know, half come in with an idea and the other half have no idea. They say, we know we need to work with an advisor. We know we want to retire, but we don't know what that means. We don't know what that looks like. So with them, it's really about asking the right questions. Well, let's, you know, instead of looking at retirement, where do you see yourself in, you know, next year, 5 years, 10 years? Do you like your job? Do you want to stay there? Do you want to still live in Wisconsin? Would you like to move? You know, just going down those paths and kind of letting our conversation take us really helps me kind of figure out what their goals are. And if they don't have answers, it at least gives them something to think about when they leave.
Have you ever turned a client away as you were going through that process? Have you determined they weren't a good fit?
Yeah, I've had one of the things I kind of screen for is if they actually need an accountant or an attorney. I'm not an accountant. I'm not an attorney. I know enough to be dangerous, but that's about it, right? So I will ask some questions that kind of lead that way. And when it's pretty obvious they're looking for those services and not mine, I'll refer them out. To say I'm here, you know, and this is what I cover. And if you'd like to come back, you know, once you have this issue taken care of, that's fine. I haven't. Outside of that, I haven't done any limitations due to their assets under management or what they're looking for. Just because with fee-based planning, I can kind of service everyone and still make sure that I'm making the revenue I need to stay in business. However, I've gone back and forth on that, you know, if I should have some sort of limitations on that. So, but I feel like there's people in their 20s and 30s that need good financial advice, but they don't have the assets. And I want to be able to give that to them, again, while still staying in business. So that's something I'm still working on.
And okay, so let's use that as an example. Then do you do financial planning fees, I assume? Sort of fee for service?
Mm-hmm. Yep, I work on an hourly basis. And typically by the end of that intro appointment, I know how we're going to end up. So I'll say, you know, Jimmy and Susie, I think we'd work great on a fee basis. You don't really need help with investment management. You just need someone to tell you what to do. This is my fee. And if you want to move forward, you know, just let me know and then we'll work that way. That's worked pretty well. And then again, I can address those needs for those people who really don't, you know, a lot of 20 somethings might have a 401k plan, but they don't have anything else under management, but I can still help them, you know, figure out what they need to do for budgeting and debt repayment and just typical liquid savings or whatever, you know, whatever their needs are, just by using that fee-based plan. So yeah, I do use it and I've used it a lot more lately than I have in the past.
Well, and I think I can relate a little bit to, it's hard when you're working on 100% referral to turn away the referral of a 20 something that a parent, a grandparent, a neighbor, because you're in a small, especially if you're in a smaller community.
Right.
You know, I think finding the way to set up a process to your point where you can still keep the lights on, but not have to turn them away at a certain point in the career, depending on your geographical situation, mm-hmm. And where you're getting your clients, just makes a lot of sense, which is why hopefully the industry continues to move towards making it more efficient for you. Mm-hmm. To serve those kinds of clients. And
well, you know, and it's, I mean, I'm sorry, no one likes to be rejected regardless of the reason. And it can cause some ill feelings and, you know, more people are likely to complain than they are to compliment, right? So you don't want that kind of rumor floating around either. Oh, you know, she was too good to work with me or whatever else. So yeah, yeah. It's a good solution.
Yeah.
And I do, you know, there's a lot of, advisors who are struggling with having younger clients, right? A lot of advisors, their client base is concentrated in 50, 60, 70 year olds. And I haven't had that issue ever. I've always had a really good spread between all age groups. And I think some of that is just from my willingness to try to find a way to work with those younger clients.
Yeah. And hopefully those younger clients do turn into income earners with assets at some point. Exactly. So you're in.
I've been doing this for 20 years. They do. And they're some of my best clients because the trust is there. They understand how I work. They love that I know what the next step is for them and even the next step after that and the next step after that. So it's been great.
That's awesome. I mentioned in my introduction that you're a retirement income certified professional when it comes to retirement. What do you see clients struggle with the most? And what steps can a financial professional such as yourself take to help clients prepare for that transition? What is that? Yeah. What does it mean to be a certified professional?
Yeah, so I knew I wanted more education on how to work with retirees. And at the time, I didn't have the time to do a CFP. I still don't have my CFP. Because when you have children, all of a sudden, all your extra time goes away. So the retirement income certified professional came up and I was like, this is perfect. It's, I believe, 6 or 7 courses. I got it a while ago, so I can't remember. Some were in person, some were online, but it really takes you through, all the steps on actually using your income in retirement, you know, why, tax strategies are important, you know, reverse mortgages, all these other random things. So I really felt more confident when I was working with my retirees about, you know, how do you actually use your money? And you said, you know, what do your clients struggle with the most? It is the using the money. Getting to retirement is fantastic. They all want to get there. They're all super happy when it happens. But that complete life shift is very challenging. Having to pull money from accounts that you've only saved to for the last 40 years of your life is really challenging. I think the easiest way to handle that is by having a plan before that retirement date, right? So it's talking through again a lot of those situations, asking them, well, hey, you know, again, what do you see yourself doing? Are you going to be traveling more those first years of retirement? Do we need to try to pay for that? What kind of tax bracket do you feel comfortable staying in? Because that's a big deal. You know, a lot of people think, well, I want this amount of income every month, but they don't realize what that means from a tax perspective. A lot of clients don't understand how they pay taxes if they're starting to use their money. So definitely a lot of education just on pulling money out and how to do it strategically so they're not, so they're being tax efficient. And of course, they're not running out of money throughout retirement.
Is it common for people to also worry when they start pulling money out that they will run out of money? Do you spend time having to show them the plan and explain? I mean, obviously you can't guarantee that that won't happen depending on their personal situation, but I have to believe that's got to be a conversation in the process.
Absolutely. So I typically do start that again before retirement. You know, it's quarterly meetings pretty much leading up to retirement and then quarterly meetings right after. I've just done that because I find that they need a little bit more handholding in that time, and that's fine. They have a lot of questions. I want to be there for them. But I do ask them first, how much money do you think you need? Because I want to know what that figure is versus what I have for my projections. Because sometimes they say, oh, I need this much, and it's way less than what I was anticipating they were going to need based off of previous. So I may be like, hey, are you undercutting things? Why do you think it's so much less than what you were spending before? You know, and we walk through that. Or, okay, if that is a legit amount that you need and it's so much less than I thought, hey, your retirement picture looks a lot different than what we originally talked about. So let's kind of play around with some things. Did you want to do more vacationing? Did you want to give more to your grandkids? Whatever. The hard ones are when I say, hey, what's that spending figure? And it's way more than what we were projecting. So then it's a conversation of, okay, again, where did you come up with that figure? A lot of times they might be like, well, we want to do this remodeling. We want to do this traveling, whatever else. So they're limited things. It's not a every year they need that, but I really do have to talk through that with all my clients to really understand what they're looking at. And I do have frank discussions with some people about, you know, hey, the amount you want to spend just doesn't work with what you're looking at. But typically we've had those conversations way before that retirement date, right? I don't have many clients who retire that I don't feel comfortable about them retiring, if that makes sense. Most do listen and understand that they have to kind of stay within certain limits by the time they retire. So we look pretty good numbers wise, but there are some that just tend to spend a little more money than I'd like them to. And they think things will work. And all I do is, you know, caution them. I can't tell them what to do or what not to do, right? So I can just say, hey, you know, your assets don't support it. Have you thought about another job, you know, a little side job or something in retirement, or just try to encourage them to really be cognizant of it. And then again, it's repeated reviews with that topic coming up and having that conversation.
Yeah, one of the harder things to do. Mm-hmm. Lisa, you've mentioned a couple of times, so I know it's important to you, and I am biased, but I do believe working moms are superheroes. So you talked about you have a daughter and a son, I think you said. How old are they?
My daughter is 16, and she's a junior in high school, and my son is 14. He's in eighth grade.
That's awesome. Really busy time in their lives. Very. So I encourage you to keep prioritizing them. From somebody who's an empty nester, they will go. And you will have all the time in the world to study for the CFP here in about 4 or 5 years.
Exactly.
So what would your kids are in that really interesting age bracket where they're probably, they have a really interesting way of answering this question. What would they say if I asked them what their mom does?
That's a great question. I know they would probably say my mom helps people with money. My mom does financial planning. They know that phrase. I honestly don't think they understand the whole scope of it. And what we do. They know I like what I do. I come to work every day, happy to be here. I definitely have frustrating days just like everyone does, but I've never been in a career that's been more personally satisfying. And I don't know if it's because of what, you know, the financial planning part of it that I like that, which I do. If it's working with people, which I also like, if it's just being able to control my schedule and run my business the way I want, I do like that as well, but it's such a great fit for me.
Yeah. You know what? I think what you just described, if that's how they would answer it, you have succeeded, because for a 16-year-old and a 14-year-old to know that it's important for you to like what you're doing and enjoy, you know, a career, adulting, as my kids would put it, is not easy. So you want to make sure you're doing something that you like and that you help people, especially help people with their money, which is a really important component. I think at that age, that's all they need to know. That's really awesome. Thanks for sharing.
Yeah.
So back to the business. Are you noticing any specific trends or changes in how people are approaching the planning and retirement, say over the last, I am a little COVID fatigued. It was a real thing. It happened. We can't forget it. But, you know, maybe pre, post, is there anything different about the way that you see people psychologically approaching the work you do with them?
Yeah. I would say in general, I feel like people are a little more cautious than they were pre-COVID. But I think just in general, as far as trends, I don't think it's even related to COVID, but I definitely am seeing the trend where people are like, I just want to stop doing this job and then do another job that either pays less and it's less stressful. That is a very common conversation. And I would say, you know, more of my clients than not have been bringing up that kind of an option. Hey, I want to stop at 55, but I'm going to do something else then for the next 10 years or 15 years. Before I officially retire, there's not a lot of people anymore that think I'm going to retire and that means I'm completely done working. I'd say that's like the biggest trend that I've seen. People are more nervous about the market in general, just with what happened in 2020 and last year and even like this year, right? You know, through October, it was awful. And then we have a lot of conversations about, you know, when do you need this money? It's not tomorrow. It's not next year. It's 10, 20, 30 years down the road. This is just a blip and everything else. So, you know, there's a lot more handholding in those type of environments. But I'd say those two things were probably the biggest things that I've seen, that shift in what retirement looks like. And then just the shift in positivity about the market and investing in general.
Yeah, great. Thanks for sharing that. So I've read that you are a strong advocate for females in our industry. We just spent time talking about how amazing being a working mom can be if you let it be. But let's dig a little deeper. Where does that passion for you come from? And what advice would you offer to a woman looking to get into our industry today?
Yeah, I don't understand why more women don't look at this as a career. It blows my mind. It's such a great career because you, for working moms, you can control everything about it. So you set your schedule every day. You are the boss. A priority for me is to be at my children's, whatever games they play, right? So my daughter played volleyball. My son plays basketball, football. I've been able to make every game they've ever had, because I schedule my life that way. I make that a priority for myself. Yeah, I might have to work earlier that day. I might have to work a little bit when I get home, might have to work on the weekend, but it's my choice. And just having that choice is, I think, so powerful. And that's what I think takes a lot of the stress off. And the, you know, people, I feel like, hate their jobs because they don't have that choice. Well, guess what? Working moms, you can have all the choice you want by being a financial advisor. The, you know, a lot of women that I've talked to about it are like, oh, it's all, you know, all you do is math and I'm not good at math. That's not true. It's just not true. I mean, do you have to have basic, you know, common sense when it comes to math things? Sure. I mean, you need to understand what the output is, but we have systems that do everything for us. And you know, it takes a little practice and you can handle anything that comes your way. So, I don't think that should be a hindrance for any woman at all. It's definitely more relationships.
Yeah, I couldn't agree. I mean, I've been talking about this for a really long time, and I agree with you. It's a little, I don't know. I don't exactly know how we break through in a big way. I think it's just one woman at a time. And having these kind of conversations, you hear the math and accounting kind of thing, the numbers. I hear boring and mundane. I hear sales. And to your point, a lot of those are myths. I suppose the business can be that way should you choose, but you use the perfect word, which is choice. You have the choice on making your business, you know, what you want it to be, and it doesn't have to be boring.
Yeah, it shouldn't be sales. We should never be selling anything to anybody. We should be providing solutions that they need. So we should be listening to them. We should understand their priorities, and then we can find solutions that actually help them meet their goals. That's it. It's not sales.
Yeah. And a lot of women I know are like they wake up in the morning problem solving. And that's really what you're doing, to your point, yeah. Right? The solutions right. Part.
Absolutely.
So, well, hopefully there's a bunch of women out there listening to this right now, and you and I are at least giving them something to think about.
Yeah. Come on in. It's a great industry. Just fantastic.
That's great. How would they get started? What do you think they would do?
I feel like finding, you know, an experienced advisor who could be a mentor is probably, you know, step number one. It doesn't matter, again, if it's a gentleman or a female, as long as they're a person of integrity. They have some experience. They have great, you know, client retention. I think that's a good sign of a good advisor, right? People like working with them and they keep coming back. They have the choice to leave and they don't. But yeah, I think that'd be the best way to start.
Yeah, good advice. Lisa, what have I not asked you that you think the listeners should hear, whether that be about you, your experience, something they can learn from? Is there anything out there that we haven't covered yet that you just think would be important for the listeners to know?
I was thinking about a couple of things prior to this. I mean, one is just in general, I think people need to give themselves grace in this industry. It's tough. We have a lot of things we have to cover. Yeah, there's the client needs, but there's also compliance and there's regulatory changes and whatever else. And I think, you know, everyone just needs to do the best they can. They need to rely on Cambridge or their broker dealer for, you know, for help with some of the other things, but just try not to get overwhelmed. And again, constantly be looking at ways to improve your business or make things more efficient and really own it. I'm always looking at ways to make my job easier. Utilize technology, come up with workflows, what have you. The other thing I thought of was was a part of the RPM, the Real Practice Management Program at Cambridge. That was awesome. It was such a great, you know, it gave me all the tools I needed to be able to identify what I want to do, what my values are, build my business the way they are. I haven't implemented everything. But I know what I need to do and I can still go back on that information. And I'm utilizing the coaching program right now actually to kind of work in that same direction. So if people are out there and they don't have a mentor, they haven't utilized coaching services, they may want to look at that. You don't know what you don't know. And there's a lot. Most people going into this business aren't going into it thinking they're going to be a business owner, right? They're thinking I'm going to be a financial advisor, but the business owner part comes along with it for a lot of people. And we don't have that natural knowledge. You don't have to struggle. There's resources available to you.
Yeah. Thank you for mentioning that. You know, it's interesting. In fact, I was just in a meeting recently and we were discussing the fact that the people that attend the RPM coaching program, and it could be any program, not just Cambridge's, but it, to your point, it teaches you how to work it's an old saying, but work on the business instead of just in the business, think more strategically. And by doing that, the growth rates of those that attended RPM, they are significantly higher than somebody, you know, the average growth rate of those who haven't, significantly by double digits. So it just goes to show that taking the time to think strategically about what you want things to look like and how you want them to work and making changes, being comfortable making changes can really pay off. So I'm really glad that you brought that up and mentioned that.
Oh yeah. It was huge for me. And the other thing that came from it was just a great community. I mean, I'm basically a solo on my own, but I met so many advisors and I can reach out to them now. They're still friends. We, you know, catch up at all the conferences and get to say like, well, what's going on in your business, and I can learn from them, right? So they might be buying a business and maybe I'm going to buy a business down the road, and I can learn from their mistakes, or, you know, find out how they structured things or whatever else. Just getting that community together is such a great resource as well.
Absolutely. I couldn't have said it better. Community is key. Continued learning and learning from others instead of having to make all the mistakes yourself,
yes,
which is important. So as someone with a family, clearly you're a dedicated parent. Attending events of your children can take up a lot of time, but mm-hmm. you're also involved in the community outside of the office. How do you strike that balance? How do you bring it all together?
Yeah. So the community involvement definitely depends on what I have going on, right? I've been involved with Rotary for 15 years now, something like that, in various leadership roles within my club and then the district there. And it's something that brings a lot of value to me personally. I've made a lot of great connections from it that, you know, I've met people I don't know how I would have met if I hadn't been a part of Rotary. But I can't always be, you know, be there. Tax time is usually very busy beginning Q1 of the year. So I just do what I can. I try to communicate with them. If I'm like, hey guys, you're not going to see me for a while. They know what I do. And it hasn't been an issue at all. But balance is kind of a joke. Like it's kind of impossible. I do just try to say, hey, I'm going to own my day and try not to get too stressed out about it. Okay, today I have to focus more on work. Tomorrow I have to focus more on the kids because of X, Y, or Z, and just go with it. The next day, you know, tomorrow's another day. And if something was out of balance today, I can fix it tomorrow.
I think that's great advice. I think sometimes I think back to the whole women in our business, or women in business in general, probably not just our business, especially those who have children. Somebody in generations long ago set us up for failure by making this statement that you could have it all. And I'm sure if I Googled, I could figure out who that was. And it's certainly not critical of them. Back then, it was probably a great inspiring message. But to some extent, it set us up for feeling like we were failing. Because you can't do it all at one time. You can have it all eventually, but you have to prioritize. And to your point, I think the message I just took from that that's most important is give yourself some grace, because you're not going to get it all done in one day or one yep. week or one Absolutely. Year for that matter.
Yep. And some of it too is just owning your situation, right? Okay, I wanted to get all this stuff done, but I can't. That doesn't mean I'm a failure. It just means that that's what happened today. What can I do to fix it? So instead of it letting it beat you down, just accept it and give yourself grace, like you said, and then just what's the next step? What's the next solution? That helps a lot mentally.
A wise message for regardless of what gender you are. Like yes. in the end, life is a little hectic in our world today. And so hopefully our listeners got some value from that. Lisa, thanks for joining me on Cambridge Stronger. We appreciate your trust and that you place in us at Cambridge. And I know the listeners will get a lot of really good value from hearing your story. So thank you for sharing yourself with us today. Thank you for tuning in to Cambridge Stronger. I invite you to listen to my podcast episodes, where I have candid conversations with genuine, inspirational financial professionals and leaders within this fiercely independent financial services industry. The best of the best. The strongest of the strongest. You can listen to my podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Pandora, iHeartRadio, and the Podbean app.